Welcome to the Nutramedical Report for the Wednesday edition, January 27th, 2010. We've got quite a lineup for you today. In the first segment, we're going to have, for this first segment, John DiNardo. John, tell us the latest in Earth changes and what you're seeing, because we're posting up now, and I was watching the Science Channel last night talking with some really good programs about black holes and the Chandra satellite, which we posted up the links directly, showing that this is not a theory anymore, that in fact we are already passing through the early part of the galactic plane, that we are already in the debris field, that there is going to be a ramping up of solar cycle 24 now with the M-class solar mass ejection, which, by the way, was on the opposite side of the sun. Thank God it wasn't pointing toward us. Because our shields are down, there's a giant geomagnetic hole from the area of Antarctica all the way in the South Atlantic, all the way up to the tip of Africa, that if you go out into space, it's up to four times the actual diameter of Earth. And so, like Star Trek and Scotty, our shields are down. We're in some trouble. If we have a solar mass ejection, any area exposed, and because the solar mass ejections are likely to be in the southern hemisphere, because the approaching dwarf star is south of the ecliptic, it's below the ecliptic or the plane of the rotation of the planets, and it is arriving. I mean, this is the ancient destroyer, Nibiru, whatever you want to call it. It is a dwarf star, probably a number of Earth masses, somewhere between 5 and 20 or more Earth masses in size. You can only see it on things like an IRAS or infrared satellite or X-ray satellite. You can't see it otherwise in the naked eye until it starts to approach to the point where it creates a plasma field around it, like the wings of the ancient winged destroyer that was in the symbology and the cartouches, the drawings and so on in the ancient temples in Egypt, where it shows very clearly that this is an object that approaches and becomes, quote, a second sun. So what's happening and what's the latest that you hear?
Well, for the last 10 months, I've been putting out, publishing an alert that I have a theory that the reason that the sun went into an abrupt change from its 8 years of solar hyperactivity to an abrupt change of virtually no activity was because its electrical and magnetic fields have been diverted away from the sun where it had, since it had entered our solar system, and it was passing directly below the orbit of Jupiter, and therefore Jupiter was the closest large object to it, and as a result its electromagnetic and electrostatic discharges were going to Jupiter, leaving virtually no fire between Planet X and the Sun, which would explain why Planet X, or why the Sun, went from its 8 years of hyperactivity to 2 years, that is 2008 and 2009, of virtually no activity at all, unprecedented quietness. There's got to be a reason for it. This is a cause for alarm, because things don't happen so
well. I've got a theory, and I just want to run it by you. My theory is actually pretty simple. If you think of the solar system as a plasma field, and the solar wind as having one charge, which is electrons that are speeding out, and then on the outside of the heliosphere, which is the outside of the solar system between the orbit of Pluto and the Oort cloud, which are the asteroid cloud of dust and particles outside the solar system, there's a difference there. And that potential difference, when an object penetrates through, like a dwarf star penetrates through a hyper-elliptical orbit, it penetrates through the heliosphere, and you get a solar mass ejection, almost like if you bring an object near a Van de Graaff generator, you're going to get a spark that's going to jump. And then as it gets near other objects like Saturn or Jupiter, which are, have large gravitational masses and a large, you know, plasma field around themselves and a magnetosphere, they're going to be a discharge of plasma across them and not toward the sun. But now as this object approaches below the ecliptic toward the sun, the sun will then start discharging plasma spikes and electromagnetic, if you want to call arms, which we call solar mass ejections. And the first evidence of this is on the opposite side of the sun, and I would venture to guess if they look at this astrolaze, you talked about the, what's it called, the astro?
It's called the AstroViewer, and I would like listeners to memorize that name and do a Google search, find the AstroViewer program and use it.
Here's the question. They should see solar mass ejections always in the direction of, if this object was just below Jupiter as it approached into the solar system or somewhere in that region, they should see solar mass ejections heading from the sun below the ecliptic or below the plane of the rotation of the solar system toward Jupiter or somewhere in that region, because apparently that's where this object passed near Jupiter. Jupiter acts like, in a sense, a flypaper magnet to grab comets and asteroids, so that instead of them zipping into Earth, they kind of get pulled in by the gravitational field of Jupiter and end up crashing into it. So in a sense, it protects us and the inner solar system from incoming asteroids from the Oort cloud outside the solar system.
Right. Planet X, is you can visualize it as sort of like a beehive that's cruising into our solar system below our ecliptic plane and coming up underneath our table, so to speak.
Right. Now, here's something that,
circular table.
For those that are preparing and thinking that they want to go to the southern hemisphere, I have a couple of warnings for you. The first is that the solar mass ejection is likely to be more powerful or more direct in the southern hemisphere, not the northern. Number two, you need to be prepared for the fact that if this happens in the southern hemisphere, even though you're not as heavily populated and so on, that they may have direct radiation effects that may be much more damaging. The reason why the globalists are scrambling to build these underground cities is they know that there's earth changes that happen periodically. There's tons of evidence for it now. And I think they're quite survivable. In fact, if you have natives that have this in their legends about surviving this, and it's obviously doesn't last that long, it's quite survivable, but it requires some planning. And it can also be very nasty if you don't plan and don't think this is going to happen. And I'm not going to set a date either, because I tell people you have to understand this is over a period of years or decades, and the earth changes could occur with multiple things happening that seem to be converse. In other words, as rainfall increases, even if the world either cools or heats, you end up with the northern latitudes can go into an ice age. There's volcanism in the bottom of the oceans, and I had this when we had Scott Stevens on Project Camelot, and I don't know if he understood the idea of under-oceanic volcanism, because I have a background in oceanography. The primary driver of climate on the Earth are two things: the solar activity of the energy put out by the solar cycle, and number two, volcanism at the bottom of the oceans. And you heat a pot of water from the bottom. So the volcanoes at the bottom of the ocean, there's 23,000 miles of 90 of volcanoes, 23,000 miles around the Earth, and there's over 20,000 volcanoes. Most of the volcanoes that are active on the planet are at the bottom of the ocean. They're not up on land. And if people aren't prepared for what's coming, big earthquakes, more volcanoes going off, and they're getting right at the bound of, I think it's Mount Vesuvius over in Italy. There's millions of people that are sitting right at the bottom of the volcano, and it's getting active again. I don't understand this, but there's lack of...
Really? I didn't know about Vesuvius becoming active. Right,
yeah, there's evidence it's getting active again. And volcanoes everywhere, whether it's this giant super volcano in Ecuador, or even the swarms of volcanoes that are occurring around Yellowstone. All the volcanoes everywhere are getting more active, including the Gekel Range underneath the Arctic ice shelf.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you mentioned Vesuvius recently becoming active, that's an ominous sign, because the great prophet, accurate healer and prophet, Edgar Cayce, had predicted in his trances, actually, that when you see Mount Vesuvius becoming active, expect California earthquakes to start to rumble.
Yeah, I've been telling them that I don't know which April or May, but I know it's coming in April, May, year, the next, or whatever, that we're going to have some big quakes. We see swarms off Petrolia, California, all the way to the Baja.
So he said something's... when you see Vesuvius get active, watch out in California.
Yeah, stay right there. We'll be back in a second. Okay. Welcome back, and we're going to continue with John DiNardo. He'll be popping in on our program tomorrow. We have Dr. Mike Kaufman on in hour one. These issues are coming up, and we're starting to get some hard science now that's saying that this shouldn't be ignored any longer. And the big question comes up, and what I tell people in pattern recognition is always look for the anomalies. Don't believe anything until you see a strong government cover-up. And there's a problem here that we have now accumulating evidence from NASA going back to the early 1980s. We now have the Chandra satellite, X-ray satellite, picking up evidence that there's something approaching below the ecliptic. We see very strange solar activity. Now it's starting to ramp up, so the sun's going to start getting hotter now during the solar cycle 24, and we're going to start seeing things on Earth changes, earthquakes, increasing dramatically. Just like Yeshua HaMashiach Jesus said, Earth changes, climate changes, including now failed crops, increased rainfall, the northern climates and latitudes very likely moving toward a cooling period, believe it or not, despite the fact that we're having. And the danger that even if it gets slightly warmer, the increased rainfall will cause the northern latitudes to enter a relative ice age compared to even a global warming, which will be, of course, driven by sun and not carbon dioxide. So wrap it up if you can for a moment, and we'll have you back on tomorrow with Dr. Mike because we're going to talk about the climate issues. Now the cap and trade is under the gun. It's literally the center point of a new world government, a new world tax, based on this environmental green agenda, this bubble, this lie that they're trying to build for a new world economy, and literally the mark of the beast is based on this sustainable development lie.
Well, I'm going to ask your viewers, Dr. Deagle, to remember this one word, astroviewer, A-S-T-R-O-V-I-E-W-E-R, all one word. Look it up on the internet and find the astroviewer computer program that allows you to see a computer graphics picture of the solar system as if you were a person sitting on planet Earth at any time of the day, at any day you choose, at any month and any year. And then you can, that person can then go back to July 20th, 2009, when there was a great comet collision into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter, which I suspect was caused by one of the massive beehive, one of the massive bodies in the Planet X beehive of celestial bodies cruising right below Jupiter at that point in 2009. And we have tremendous solar and an abrupt decrease in solar activity down to unprecedentedly quiet levels during the year 2008-2009 following an extremely unprecedented hyperactivity period from 2001 to 2008. And I theorize that it was because it's below Jupiter, but I need your listeners to do the same thing, to verify what I found, to make sure that I was not mistaken. Furthermore, and more importantly, they need to do this because we can track, using the AstroViewer, we can track the course of Planet X as it comes in from now on each progressive day, and we have a lot of intelligent people out there that can feed us information by calling into your program day by day and letting them know what they have found. The key thing to remember is this. Planet Earth is on an orbit just like all the other planets. Will we be unlucky and get hit by that thing? Will we be unlucky enough to be right below it as it comes in below us? I mean, we might be fortunate enough to be in that part of the year, like, say, June or July or August, when we're on the opposite side, furthest away from Planet X's trajectory right below the ecliptic. Or, on the other hand, we may be extremely unfortunate to be right below it. If we're right below it, we're going to get the same kind of electrostatic and electromagnetic fire just took last year from Planet X.
John, I want to continue this so we have adequate time for people to understand what we're talking about here, because we're not dealing with pseudoscience. We're going to be pulling up resources, putting up pictures and images. I had Chandra, which is the X-ray telescope, and more images from NASA, more tracking of the earthquake patterns. The issues of the material that we posted up here the other day with Freeman of the Boeing large antenna array up in northwestern Australia and the strange images you can see right from Google Satellite. I mean, we have the actual images. People can't dispute this anymore. There's something going on. And there's also manipulation occurring by powers that be that want to amplify and create and make these disasters worse, increasing drought in the southern hemisphere, which has crashed the food crops in Argentina and in Australia. So this is not a joke. This is very serious, and it ties also with the loss of liberty that we're facing with things like, and we're going to talk with Reverend Ted Pike now,